Tony is on the road. You look great. I can see you. Our audience can't, because we don't put these. Although someone said to me we should start putting these on YouTube, even if we just put the, like, just the audio with pictures, that some reason people will actually watch that on YouTube or listen to it. I don't know.
Let's talk about that off the air. I can't agree to any live nothing. No, I don't know.
I think our meetings about the show might be more interesting than the actual episodes.
Maybe we should do those as a YouTube channel and not do the show that way.
Here's an idea. Maybe we should have a meeting about the show ever.
That's crazy talk. Please just get a hold of yourself.
Hi, everybody. I'm Maddie Blake. That's Tony Arkin. We're back for another episode of Rated P for Paranormal, the show that rates and reviews paranormal films and television and anything in pop culture that is paranormal. We're going to get right to it. No fiddle faddling around tonight, because we have a lot to get to. Our film is Endangered Species. We're going to talk cattle mutilations and such and so forth. No top three tonight, because we've just got too much to do. We're going to replace it with something else. I also want to follow up on a movie we never got to, but teased in a previous episode. We're also going to talk about Skinwalker Ranch, as we promised, and the congressional hearing. We have a parapost as well. So, Tony, let's get right to it. First of all, as a follow-up to what some people are calling P4P pandemonium, the battle that we had over our decision on Damien, we said, are we going to include all three as a canon on the shelf? So I went ahead and watched the third.
Oh, you did. You're one up on me.
Yeah, I did. I watched it. And I can end all the drama and say that only the first one is going on our shelf. It will not go on as a three-part canon.
Was I wrong? Was it not actually pretty good?
It's fine. I think it's weaker actually than the second one, which I thought was. It's so funny. You know, it purports to be this big, epic political drama, and it's just kind of like ends up being the Keystone Cops of a bunch of bumbling priests who can't kill this guy, and they're running into each other and falling off things inexplicably.
Oh, really?
It's hilarious. I mean, it's unintentionally hilarious at times. There are some great scenes. There are some great individual horror scenes, like in two. And Sam Neill, the president, is that who it was?
Sam Neill plays Damien.
Thank you. Sorry. Sam Neill has this. He's funny. He's a good actor. He looks the part. He has a great look. When he's with another human being and doing a character scene, he's very effective. He's really a great actor. It's awesome. And then when he becomes like Damien in front of a group of people, like delivering Damien dialogue, it becomes really almost comical. He does a thing where he looks side to side. Like, you can tell someone, I read a review. Someone said, I think he saw the dailies of himself doing that and just kept doing it because he thought it was effective or something. And it just comes off and he starts speaking in this, "You will know the truth of all the law."
Oh, wow. And it's almost like
he becomes Dracula or something.
Disciples of the Watch, there must be no delay, and the victory will be ours, now and forevermore. Do you hear?
These priests find the knives and they're going to stab him. And as I said, it just ends up being kind of like bumbling priest, not
Are
able.
Are you serious? It's still about stabbing with those three knives. I mean, they can't get a new plot. What is going on?
And spoiler alert, that's the big ending. His
Has
lover
he been adopted by another millionaire.
He becomes president or something.
You know, I know he does, but like, so do you meet his ailing father in a wheelchair or something?
Or I
like
don't even next adopted father. Does he even become president? I don't even remember.
I think he does, or he's running for president.
He's the
you're the one who just saw it. I didn't see it.
Hold on, I know. He becomes the not spokesperson. What do you call it? Not attaché. When you're the
ambassador to.
Thank you, thank you, ambassador.
He takes his dad. He takes his dad's
correct.
Well, he takes his original adopted father's job,
and then the girl ends up just like stabbing him in the back. And that's like the big climactic
the girl. There's a love interest.
Yes, this
of course.
I think she's a Porter, if I remember correctly. I vastly lost interest. I was like watching golf video swings while I was watching. Because I was like, oh, no. Yeah, this is not. This is
so we didn't have to have a long discussion about it. That's good.
Exactly. There was some really, I think I took some notes. Let me see here. Cause there was one or two lines I wrote down that might be funny now that it's been like a week or two out of context as I was watching right. It. Let's see. Let's see if I did. Let's see. Oh yeah. Okay. Oh, I called it Omen 3, The Omening. I said somehow this movie comes off way more 70s in a bad way, not in the cool, awesome 70s way, but it comes off way more 70s than 2 did, and it wasn't even shot in the 70s, it was shot in the 80s.
Yeah, okay. I guess I don't completely understand your 70s breakdown. Some movies that are good movies are shooting things that are cheap 70s. Not, it doesn't mean the movie itself is cheap 70s. And I think you're being ageist.
All right. Yeah, maybe you're right. I wrote Priest says Three Stooges. Because they just like they all right, so like he goes on a fox hunt and you know they're all on horseback, and for some reason he separates from everyone else. They like inexplicably drag a dead fox to throw everyone else off the scent, or that his dog will follow it, but like how would they know that he would just follow that one scent? It makes no sense. And then they've got a good plan here, right? They're gonna lure him away. You're like, okay, all right, I'm going with this. He again, inexplicably, is the only one that follows that scent. And you're like, all right, but still, how are they going to trap him? So he finds the dead fox on a bridge. And one guy pulls up on one side of the bridge in the broad daylight. And the other guy pulls up on the other side of the bridge in broad daylight. And they just start walking towards him with knives in their hands. Like, just openly walking. I'm like, now, you believe this person to be literally the son of the devil. And your big plan is... you're going to slowly walk in him in the middle of the daylight where he sees you coming really slowly with another guy with a knife and clearly explores like that. So, of course, he just looks and goes like to the dogs, like, get him. And they attack the one guy. And then he looks at the other guy and controls the horse with his mind. And the horse bucks him off the edge. And I'm like, these priests are horrible.
It's amazing. These priests are horrible assassins. How did that happen?
It's like, if we're gonna do this, let's do this, guys. Let's have a plan. Maybe do that at night.
Look, you lost me and they wanted to stab him with the same knives that are in the other two movies. I'm done. They outran that in the second one. So no.
All right. Well,
it doesn't go on the shelf.
We've settled our big debate. The first
Omen. But have you changed your mind about the fact that, I mean, you said that the whole set now was going to get trashed because if you didn't like this one, then the first Omen wasn't going to get in there. And I'm like, okay, so then The Exorcist doesn't get on the shelf either, really,
no,
does it?
No, I said I will allow you to have, well, not allow, you chose as a single pick as we can do without
a full voting. You know it's the truth.
I will allow you, as the Old Testament said.
There must be no delay.
Okay, you picked it. That's fine on your picks. I'm also going to put The Omen on as if it were an individual pick.
Okay.
But what we were deciding, supposedly, for that episode is do 1, 2, and 3 as a series go on, right. And that's a no.
All right, so it's like two different categories.
Yeah, I think so.
And then The Omen is a standalone.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Gotcha. So we each pick The Omen as a standalone as like one of our extra picks, which could be bumped later as if we get to that number.
Look, I don't even think the second one is a fun Halloween movie, like a goofy Halloween movie for a party. Like I wouldn't even put it on in the background necessarily.
Right. And there was something about, I guess it was William Holden's performance in 2 and the whole kid angle, which I thought had very interesting moments.
Right.
Some of the performances make it more palatable than 3.
3's just got Sam Neill looking side eyes.
And you know what? 3 gets like unnecessarily gratuitous too at times. Like there's a weird thing where he's like, I don't know. There's a weird, he gives these monologues alone in a room, which I kind of thought was at first like, ooh, this is spooky and this could be creepy. He's alone in a room with a crucifix.
Right.
And
you talking to me?
Basically, he's kind of having it out, but the dialogue and his performance just immediately ruined it for me. And then there's a later sex scene with that lady that's kind of violent and weird. And It just it had an icky feeling compared to two. Two,
hold
two
on.
Wasn't
I just
great.
Have to click rent. Hold on, rent.
No, not even in your good creepy way. Like, not even in like, oh, I'm gonna mess Maddie up by sending him this way. Just like they tried to be like that, and it's just like, ugh.
There is no bad creepy sex scene. Just so you know, that doesn't exist.
Want to make a bet? Oh, you mean good. Not from our personal canons? You mean?
Okay.
All right. We should end it there before.
Good night, everybody. Right. Good night.
Three will not go on the list.
Disciples of the Watch.
We have a lot to cover. I want to just say now, full disclosure, you know, I'm at my mom's house right now on a computer I don't usually use. This way I sound like this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even using my own Zoom, man. We could be disconnected at any moment. Which means we'll just, I'll send you a new link and we'll start again. I just needed to let you know.
I understand. I cannot cast stones because I've been on the road so many times on you and had crappy mics. You had to put up with me. So now it's your turn. And based on the opening of this podcast, the review we just did, many people will want us to get disconnected at this point.
It's true, because we didn't even, we talked too long about a movie that we didn't like, that we didn't even say we were going to talk about.
And quite frankly, I don't remember any of my critiques on it because I forgot.
All I know is I've just rented the movie and I'm going to see it tonight.
I forgot it while I was watching it, which is really incredible.
And now it's time to hear from you.
You're a godsend. A savior.
No, I'm just the postman.
The P4P mailbag.
Hi, Tony and Matty. Peter Stray here. Great episode with the Omen movies. The priest was played by Patrick Troughton, the second Doctor Who after William Hartnell. So he's much beloved in the UK. Also, funny, you mentioned Old Dogs New Tricks and Jack Palance in City Slickers. The nanny was played by his daughter, Holly Palance. So that's another turn up for the books there. Also, I'm pretty sure that the death of David Warner with the sort of the failing brake on the truck could well have inspired the Final Destination series. Also, a tremendous tribute to the great Alan Arkin, who produced not only an incredibly impressive array of performances, but also some impressive human beings as well, in my opinion. Another great podcast, and I'm sure there'll be many more.
Now it's time for the stuff we didn't get to.
What a piece of junk.
P4P junk drawer.
I did watch also a lot of episodes of Black Mirror, the Netflix kind of modern day Twilight Zone series. And I didn't like a lot of it, but a couple of them were really interesting, you know, had a really interesting premise. There was a kind of a neat one with the kid from Breaking Bad. What's his name? Aaron Paul or something. And Josh Hartnett, where they were space astronauts up in space. But you can.
Is there another kind?
They were astronauts in space, and you could lay down on a thing and hook yourself up to the pod, whatever. And then back on Earth, your space body is unconscious, and your conscious goes into an avatar body they've built for you, like a flesh and bones avatar. So it's really you inside, but it's not your body. It's a fake body.
It sounds like a creepy sex scene that might be part of this whole discussion we're having.
It might go that way. So anyway, I just thought it would be worth that. But my favorite episode was called Loch Henry, and it's about a murder that happens in a small town in Scotland. And a documentary crew, and it's kind of a meditation on what all these true crime murder shows are doing to us, maybe, and tourism vis-a-vis murder shows. Like, you know, we're actually going to these sites and like, ooh, that's where someone Versace was murdered, right, or whatever. And throughout these episodes, Netflix is represented as something called Streamberry. It's like their code for them. Right.
Okay.
And they actually, I was kind of like, good on them, because a couple of these filmmakers were definitely analyzed, like, what is this streaming stuff doing to us? There was another episode where you and I, we have a tough day at the office, let's say, and we go home to watch Streamberry, which is, you know, Netflix got the same symbol, same noise, everything, but they call it Streamberry. turn it on and you see a famous person basically acting out the day you just had in a series, on a show, in a fictional scripted show. And the people are like, what is going on? And the whole conceit is that they're watching us constantly. And because when we signed on to our Streamberry contract, they've got the rights to portray us however they want. So it was like a mix of like kind of what's going on with the strike now with AI and how much we were dependent on these streaming services and who's watching us when. And I thought mm-hmm. it was really kind of an interesting episode. So it did. It reminds me a little bit of a not as good, but kind of a modern day Twilight Zone. That's the feel I got. It's some of them are thought provoking. I gotta say.
Yeah, I dip in and out of that show. I've seen, I don't even know, like, season to season what I've seen. I think I saw the first one of season one, which really kind of blew my mind. That was really disturbing and great. And then I've dipped in and out, and I pretty much liked what I've seen.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it is, I mean, it is like Twilight Zone for
yeah. today. It's fun. Some of it is. You know, there's a little too much messaging in it still. Every episode has something in it that's trying to teach us a social lesson because it's Netflix. So, but if you can kind of get yeah. through that mm-hmm. and just it's some of these, you know, plots are very creative, I would say. Well-written and fun.
This is a, you know, it's good. This is brand new news for a show that's what's only been on seven. Is this like the seventh season for it? We're just getting to talk about this.
I know.
We're so behind, man.
Well, some of them in our defense, I would say are horror based on technology seems to be a big theme, but not strictly yeah. paranormal. So it wouldn't fall in our purview. We'd have to
Okay.
Yeah. We would have to have certain episodes that are clearly paranormal. The next thing we promised you we would talk about Beyond Skinwalker Ranch. This is a spin-off show to the highly successful Secret of Skinwalker Ranch. You and I covered that show on this very podcast. You can go back and listen to that episode. We interviewed the showrunner, executive producer, Jason Shook. And I was asked to be their local expert as that team went to investigate the Bridgewater Triangle. If you don't know the Bridgewater Triangle, it's an area of high strangeness that I grew up right near and that I've visited many, many, many times. My wife is from a town that's right in the middle of the Bridgewater Triangle. I had an orb experience there, massive UFO sighting in that area back in the 70s. So it's an incredible area. And this team from Beyond Skinwalker Ranch, whose job it is to go investigate other areas that might be like a Skinwalker Ranch, see what they can learn. They use me as the kind of local expert. And it was really cool, a bit scary. And you can get that episode now on demand. You just look for the show Beyond Skinwalker Ranch. There's only one season of that show. And look for the episode about Bridgewater Triangle and you'll see me. One thing, Tony, of note is the night we booked to do it, told them where to meet me. They wanted to go to this one place. I said where we should meet. And it was the coldest night in Massachusetts. And I believe it was like 23 years. We were getting like minus 15 degree reading.
Ooh, wow.
If I remember correctly. Yeah, it was ridiculously cold. So, you know, my beard was frozen. Icicles on my beard. It was really rough filming. But the scariest thing that happened, well, I'll play a little clip here. Listen to this.
Tonight on Beyond Skinwalker Ranch.
Oh my gosh, look at that. We're seeing 4 or 5 times the average level of magnetic activity.
I had an orb experience not too far from here.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
All of a sudden, I am much less excited about going out there and looking for this.
You were scared and uncomfortable.
Exactly right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, like physically uncomfortable and mentally uncomfortable and, like, cause I'm kind of done, you know, doing like in the field paranormal stuff. Like, I don't really want to do that anymore. Although,
are you really done with that?
Hold on to that thought. I'll get back to that.
Hold on.
So the weird thing is, you know, equipment kept breaking, stuff that never breaks. And I actually even tried to give them an out, saying like, well, it is the coldest night in 20 years. And they were like, nope, this stuff is built for this contingency, like cold shouldn't matter, you know, those type of weird things. But then he got these high readings of
radiation and something
radiation
else, right?
And yeah, and that kind of bothered me. And he's like, yeah, these are like really elevated, you know, for what should be, you know, anything natural wouldn't read like this. And it shifted at that point, Tony, like from, you know, oh, cool paranormal. Are we going to see an orb? Are we going to see UFO? To like, wait a second. Like everyone I love is from this area. You know, I know a bunch of people who've died of cancers and breast cancers and all this stuff. At one point he said, like, he was a CIA guy. And he said, if we were being monitored by a bad actor technologically, this is what I would expect to see on this monitor. Like,
well, I was watching the show. So.
Not that kind of bad actor, Tony.
Oh, okay. I don't know the lingo.
Hold on. If someone was on the show Succession and had five lines, but wasn't very believable, we'd expect to see
I'm
this.
Feeling that guy watching. You all have to tune into this. This is great, Maddie. You really do look uncomfortable. And I just think it's really funny too that you kind of like describe an orb experience to them and they're just like, yeah, whatever, sure. And then like later
they have a straight up orb experience and it's really similar to what I had, and they're trying to make connections, right? So I thought that was a big one there, and maybe at some point but it's funny, it was really cool. I know you're fascinated by the Bridgewater Triangle, so I was excited to tell you that was happening. We couldn't tell the audience, obviously, because it was still in the can, but now it's out so we can talk about it. And one last thing I'll say is funny. I just said I was kind of done with that, but all I can say at this point is that is not the last time you're going to see me involved somehow with Skinwalker Ranch. And that's all I can say at this point. How's that for a tease?
Time for this week's Para Post.
We're going to play a different type of version of Para Post. Of course, if you're new to the show, we haven't done this segment in a while. These are posts that people make on social media that are paranormal in nature. We're going to play a special edition of Para Post. Whose Para Post was it? So, Tony, you're going to play. You can play along at home with friends, family. I'm going to read you an actual tweet about the congressional hearing, and you have to tell me whose Para Post was it? Okay?
Okay.
Here we go. This is an actual tweet about the congressional hearing on UFOs some weeks ago that we promised we would talk about, and let this launch the discussion. The tweet is as follows. Quote, there's an old saying, when a maniac is at the door, feuding brothers reconcile. Just finished watching the hashtag UAP hearing, and I can't believe I'm about to say this, but bravo. A sane, sober, and serious discussion by both sides of the aisle. Wish it didn't take this for that to happen. Hashtag UAP. Whose Para Post was it? A. Tom DeLonge. B. Nick Pope. C. The actual Pope. Or D. None of the above.
I'll play hardcore and say Nick Pope, I think, would probably have said that.
It's a great guess. Tony, actually, you're wrong.
Thank you. So it wasn't that great a guess.
Well, I would have guessed Nick Pope probably myself. Actually, it was another genius. D, none of the above. It was me, Maddie Blake. That is actually my tweet. I followed that up with right after that. I said, quick, basic UAP hearing translation for you. Every time Grush says, I can tell you in a skiff, that means, yes, that totally happened. Which was my takeaway from the whole thing. They said, they kept saying like, so wait a second, do we have alien bodies? And it'd be like, I can tell you in a skiff. I'm like, that's a yes.
Yes. Yeah. Because you would say no here if you said it before. Right. I don't say no here.
It's like, wait a second. Do you know people who have actually been intimidated or killed because they tried to speak out on this? I can tell you in a skiff. That's another yes.
True. That's very true.
So I thought that was a good place to start, Tony, because as you know already, we talked about this. I was dreading watching it. I don't even think I was going to watch it at one point, but I was like, oh, I have to. It's kind of my side job, you know, just because I've been disappointed by so many, as you have too, so many of these type of things, press conferences, press meetings. But this was a little different, a congressional hearing. So we watched it, and I got to say, I was blown away. I'm not a political person. I don't like politicians by and large. There are exceptions always. I don't like the whole political thing. But boy, I thought everyone, both sides of the aisle, as I said in that tweet, was sane, sober, after the truth, at least that's how they appeared. No one did a filibuster about another issue, which they usually do at those congressional hearings. They usually use it like about the actor strike. Say someone was having that congressional hearing, they would use it to go off about the border or whatever they were trying to push for their election. No one did that. No grandstanding, really. So I I'll just give my last word on it. My favorite moment was when somebody said, if all that comes out of this is we have a system by which people can report these things and not get fired, then we've done our job. And I was like, I literally was like, hallelujah, cue the music. Hallelujah. So that I thought it was a huge success.
Yeah. I was surprised that you did in a way. I mean, cause you'd really pretty much turn your back on the whole thing, you know, as a discussion point.
Yeah.
And it was just, which I totally understand. Cause I go back and forth on that too, you know, as I've told you. Okay. So I've been through a couple phases of it. I was really anticipating it. And then I convinced myself that it was going to be trash and I wouldn't, you know, and then I was like, okay, but I got to see it regardless. Cause it's historic, even if nothing happened, just the fact that they were having the hearing at all was kind of historic. So I checked it out and I was kind of blown away. Like you, I was really surprised at the level of intelligent inquiry into it. I was surprised at what they could say. In fact, I mean, he did a lot of like, I'll tell you in a skiff, but they all three did say quite a lot of things that I was surprised that they said at that hearing rather than like in an interview or something.
Right, now, right.
There was no real new information except one case that I don't know if it was Favor or the other pilot who brought up about the ship that was like a mile wide. That had not been something they had talked about before. Mm-hmm. But I think we have all heard these things, but to hear them all in one room with bipartisan interest, like you said, no infighting about it, really just the same level of interest and curiosity from, for instance, AOC and Tom Burkett, which is right. Something you'd expect to see really on any other topic. So
right, right. And nobody elbowing each other. I'll tell you, I got this sense that a lot of the Congress people probably don't believe, or I shouldn't say a lot, I don't know, but I would imagine there is a certain number of Congress people in that room who don't believe in quote unquote UFOs, aliens, whatever. They don't know what this is. They don't believe it. Maverick, one of them said that. He goes, I'm a skeptic. And he asked questions like that. So let's just say, however many there are some. What I think they were all intrigued by and dare I say angered by or invested in at very least is, wait a second. There's congressional money being shuffled off into this secret cabal being used for something. I don't care if it's tiddlywinks. I think they were like, no, not on my watch. We're going to find out where that money went. I think that's what made it a sane, sober discussion, is because I think a lot of Congress people go on, what the fuck? How much money is going into this thing? Right. And I think, you know, money talks. And
well, if, yeah.
and if their money that yeah. could
and
be
they
going
felt
to
insulted
their
insulted too. And I think they, yes. they don't like being lied to or yes. that bothered them. It seemed yeah. like effectively all the Congress people there.
And selfishly, you know, they go, well, I've got my cause du jour that gets me reelected. There's $12 billion left over and $4 billion of it went to some secret thing or $1 billion right. of it. Like, no, right. no. We got to find out what's going on here.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that started kind of seeming like it was developing into clarity was that the Congress people that had been briefed like in some sort of skiff or in some like lower level skiff, obviously they talked about, they all kind of start saying the same thing, which is like, yeah, I know you haven't seen the footage. I've seen some things in mm-hmm. the back room mm-hmm. that we really can't talk about in the news right now
mm-hmm.
that changed my mind about some stuff. And it mm-hmm. really feels like whatever that back room is, wherever they went and whatever they got shown, set the tone for that hearing. And there was only one person, I forget who it was the person you just mentioned, who was like, I don't believe in this stuff. Like, maybe he hadn't been at that meeting or something.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Everybody else
yeah.
very like sensible, you know, seeming people to kind of eccentric people,
right?
Swath of people from left to right. We're all kind of like equally not engaging in the question, well, is this real or not? They were all seemed to have accepted that there was a reality and a danger to this, and something needed to happen.
I think the credibility of the witnesses helped with that. Like, so for example, that guy who said, look, I'm a skeptic. And then he proceeded to ask questions, but in a very respectful manner, because he's talking to a Marine pilot who's exemplary human being. Exactly. So he couldn't be like kind of giggly and like, well, okay. Well,
he was pretty respectful. And I felt like he, you know, he probably was somebody who could have had his mind changed about it if he saw evidence that he believed in.
Correct.
And that's totally fair. We should all have that right to kind of decide until we have empirical evidence about it. The hearing itself blew me away. I was like, this is historic. I couldn't believe we were hearing this stuff. Any level of disclosure that I ever hoped to hear as a kid growing up, God, it has already been answered. So I'm like, everything I needed to know, everything I wanted the government to say, they kind of said. And I've made that clear, I think, in other shows where I'm like, and then I end up at the place where I'm like, okay, so why am I so interested in what the government is talking about? Like, this is not... their contact experience if they're going to tell us, they're going to tell us. If not, they're not. Are we going to believe them ever? I don't know. There's a point at which after they go, we're dealing with something we don't really understand. It's great. Maybe that's the last hearing I'll listen to.
Yeah. Right.
I really don't know how much more of this smear campaign on David Grush that I can take. And like, I'm not saying like, I believe everything I'm told, but I have no reason to disbelieve this guy. And telling me that he had some emotional problems because he was in the war is like, that's low to me. That's really like, I don't know if you read that article.
I did, yeah, unfortunately.
I found it to be kind of disgusting, and I found it to be irrelevant to the conversation utterly, but also maybe pointing to the desperation of just, what do we do to keep this shut? I don't really know, because now we're going to enter that phase of true, not true, this guy's an idiot, they don't believe this, and that fight they could keep that fight going for the next 20 years. I don't know how much more of it that I can take.
You hit the nail on the head. It crystallized for me that I've always come at this from, I believe I know what these things are, and I believe they're going to lie to us as in terms of what they are, not forget the government. And so I've got my own weirdo beliefs of what they are. My whole thing is, I hate the fact that American citizens will be fired, ridiculed, or worse for saying they saw this stuff, because I'm someone who's seen this stuff. So I don't like that. And I just love, that's why if this is the last hearing I ever watch, I'll be satisfied as long as that result happens that they were talking about. Like, just the fact that the hearing was had will help a pilot in the future say, hey, I saw a sphere in a fucking cube flying to Tampa, and he won't be fired for saying that. I think that's huge.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. I mean, there's a part of me that's like, you know, I feel like some kind of dealing with the idea that they've had this cover up for so long. I mean, even in 2017, we found out because of that article from the Times that they'd been lying about researching this stuff. They said they weren't, that it was not happening, and then they were. And then they say that it's actually something they don't know, which goes against the Condon report, and it goes against Project Blue Book's findings, which they never addressed and never copped to. So there's a part of it that's like, you know, I mean, it's a little gaslighting going on with them about this whole thing that starts to be like, well, why am I, maybe I should just break up with you guys, because I'm not, you know, it makes me realize it. And I think you might agree that a lot of the most interesting research and a lot of the most interesting books about this and the most fascinating characters involved aren't working for the government. And it makes me think that the government really doesn't really know, because they're not, you know, it starts to feel like regular folks are the people that are really dealing with this more than whatever the government thinks they know or don't.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me want to listen, like reread some Jacques Vallée books and go back to stuff now that we know actually has some validity to it, no pun intended. Like, you know, now that we know this, it's kind of cool to look back at old documentaries and old books that are saying the same thing that we're saying in the 70s and earlier.
Be harder to laugh at Bob Lazar nowadays. Not that you and I ever did, but a lot of people did.
A little harder, right?
Mm-hmm.
A little harder. And it makes it equally silly. Like, well, you know, he was brought up on charges about, you know, money laundering with a, I'm like, who, what does that have to do with anything?
With anything. So yes. So I think it was as much of a success as it could have been. Save, you know, they're not going to produce an alien head on the table. You know what I mean? At least not on this one. But it was gratifying. I felt patriotic. Like it's so funny as life is, this weird topic that's very divisive, that used to live in the shadows, that's an extreme small little thing, is the one thing that made politicians on both sides of the aisle act like human beings for 2 hours and talk to each other soberly. You know what I mean? Isn't that weird?
Back in like the 80s or something, where it's like, well, everybody's just kind of,
come on, tip on
each other's time and
dinner,
offering up their time, like, and stuff with questions. Like, wow, this is, where's George Bailey? What's happening here?
It was lovely.
I didn't exactly get choked up, but I did notice that and feel like, wow. I mean, you know, and I also realized, look, all of it's theater. It's all theater. If you listen to, like, if you listen for 5 minutes to anything people, like a congressman, like Tom Burkett says, off air, like not on air, but like casually, you know, he'll set this record straight. He's like, I am friends with Cortez. We're actually friends. This is a game. You have to understand this.
This,
you know, like, it's all respect. And I think the American public has gotten used to seeing politics on television and thinking that you're actually seeing the real thing. You're seeing the showbiz version of politics when you see it on television. And everybody that's there on television is doing their public politician thing. And in private, like any other business, it's just people, right?
I had a buddy that lived in Georgetown years and years and years ago. And he said, he said, I used to see out to dinner all the time. It was like, it wasn't these two, but I'm just going to use them for the extreme example. It was like Rush Limbaugh and, say, Keith Olbermann or something. He goes, I saw them out to dinner all the time. They're smoking cigars, laughing, eating steak. And the next night on the thing, they're calling each other a scoundrel and a, they're laughing all the way to the bank, man.
They know how good for business the other is. It's a mutual business deal, right? You know, I mean, so, but anyway, it seemed like we were looking for 2 hours at more like the people that aren't, like, they didn't seem to have their TV personas on.
Yes.
You just seemed to be interested in this thing and wanted information.
Yeah.
And it seemed to be based on a much more kind of like recognizably human interaction. And I agree that was pretty cool.
Yeah. And I guess that saying is true. You know, with all the, you know, like 9/11, whatever we were fighting about in this country when 9/11 happened, stopped at that moment.
Yeah, it stopped immediately. I mean, in New York City, it was like weeks of just like everybody was in like help each other mode, you know?
Yeah. So maybe this thing, when we, if it is true that there maybe, or at least a portion of whatever these things are, don't have our best interests in mind somehow, you know, that is the thing that brings us together, because it's hard to fight about local elections when something in the sky that you can't stop wants to do something bad to you, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, we'll see. They're not doing anything worse than we're doing to ourselves right now.
Speaking of which, did you see that Peru video of the supposed
of the miners attacking the people on hoverboards?
Not the supposedly indigenous people being attacked by large aliens. It's very analogous to what happened to the family in Vegas.
Yeah.
It reminds me, both those videos remind, in case you don't know, a video of a family in Vegas came out a couple months ago purporting that aliens landed in their backyard. We talked about it. There's police body cam footage of a streak through the sky after that streak happens, the family calls. George Knapp's been covering this on the local news.
Yeah, at first it sounds completely ridiculous. Like, it's just a really silly story. And then you start reading up a little bit about it, and it's not as silly.
So this family called in a panic, said there are aliens, these 8 foot tall, weird looking creatures crawling on our construction equipment. There is a video. It's hard to make anything out. The video is just like the video in Signs to me when the family's having the birthday party and they see the alien. Then just recently, video starts coming out of indigenous people in Peru. They claim they've been being attacked by 8 foot, 7 foot alien creatures that look like praying mantises in the jungle, and they've been attacking them for months. Supposedly a little girl was even killed, so they have dispatched military. We talked about it last week, I believe, too.
The Peruvian government or American forces went down there?
I believe it was like local Peruvian forces from what I've seen. Okay. I'm sure we've got people there, but we don't know. But, you know, that would be like, you know, the Predator team, covert, secret.
Okay. Was this not I hate the word debunked, but was this not disclosed as a group of illegal miners who were trying to get these indigenous people off of the land?
Yeah, I have seen that, but I don't know for sure that is everything.
So that may or may not be the case.
Right. I mean, with all these things, Tony, like when you see an explanation like that, that could be true, but that also could be another cover, right? I mean, I don't know.
I guess, man.
So yeah, so people are saying that people are saying like
you have hoverboards. I didn't know.
These are really jet-packed armored mine thieves to make people believe they're aliens. That type of thing. Illegal gold miners. Et cetera. But then other people saying there's no way.
Why would these people say they're aliens? I mean, that's
exactly. Different. And then the video, actually, that video has a little bit more that's discernible than the Vegas video. It does seem to be some sort of greenish. When you just look at it, it does kind of look like some sort of praying mantis or monster type thing. It's very hard to make out. But anyway, my point is, it's just odd that this is all happening now. It seems to all be happening every week. It seems like there's some other weird story with the backdrop of this congressional hearing. It's like we're watching a movie slowly play out that we've been being prepared for, as we've said on this podcast for a long, long time.
Or is because the news is getting a little bit better at dealing with this subject, these subjects, is it getting covered more?
It's a great point.
Channels you might actually know.
This has actually been going on a long, long time. I was thinking about the school children incident, that famous incident with the school
children. In Australia?
Children. Yes. I'm going to rewatch that documentary, man.
That's a really good documentary. I watched that again recently. I've been rewatching, like I said, older UFO docs and getting a lot out of them, because there's actually some footage that you don't see. They don't recycle from them that are really quite good. And they're better made than a lot of the like YouTube docs. They're actually like film crews that go out and have real interviews with people. And that's one of the best cases, actually.
It really is.
It really is.
Watching those little kids cry, describing those aliens. I'll tell you what, you got to have a heart of stone not to think something happened weird there.
Well, both in Australia and in South Africa, those two groups of school kids, neither group has gone back on their story for decades.
And they're all interviewed separately. The investigators did a great job. They interviewed them separately. Mm-hmm. So they couldn't corroborate their story. They all reported the same thing.
Was Ross Coulthard part of that movie?
I think he was.
I just read his book In Plain Sight. Have you read that? If anybody out there is looking for a good overview on the whole thing.
That's funny. Yeah, you read that. I just read the Twilight Saga again. I really recommend.
You win.
I read the Fault in Our Stars. I just can't get enough of that. That would have been a perfect name for this congressional hearing. The Fault in Our Stars.
It's true.
All right.
That could be the name of our podcast.
Let's see if there's fault with Endangered Species, starring Robert Urich, Joe Beth Williams, Hoyt Axton, Peter Coyote, and more, is a 1982 American sci-fi horror film directed and co-written by Alan Rudolph about cattle mutilation and potentially evil government or rogue government agent cabals. Tony, what did you know about Endangered Species? Had you seen it before?
I had seen it before. I've seen it a couple times. I saw it when it came out, or around when it came out. And then
82.
Yeah.
You were young.
I was young. I was like, you know, in the just starting high school or just starting preschool. I can't remember which.
Were you titillated by Joe Beth Williams?
I wanted to get arrested by Joe Beth Williams. She's my favorite. She's my favorite cop in any movie. I love her.
You know, we could have done a top three.
What's that?
We could have done a top three. What did you say? Did you throw something in there?
No.
I'm going to rewind the tape on that one. She could be in a top three cop hairs of all time. That perm that she maintains while arresting people and karate chopping them and kicking them in the nads is impressive.
It's impeccable. It's absolutely impeccable. So just on that basis alone, the movie gets high honors, you know.
Mm-hmm. Let's start at the beginning. Some really interesting editing is what stands out to me at the beginning. You are a professional editor. People actually pay you to edit things. Your thoughts on the initial editing, and let me just explain it to people. There are images of cattle running at night, and you're getting the beginnings of the plot line, and you're smash cutting between kind of the opening narrative of what this movie is going to be and then the cattle running. And I thought it was actually interesting. And I thought, oh, maybe this is better than I remember. Your thoughts as an editor of that kind of first, say, 10 minutes of the movie, how they did that.
I'm actually kind of a fan of the first half hour of this movie. So I thought that I really thought, and I'm not just a fan, but like, I thought there was some kind of good filmmaking. And
yes,
I mean, obviously it's kind of a lower budget, you know, Shaggy Dog movie a little bit. It still feels like, if it's 82, but it really feels like a 70s movie.
Now that's a movie that feels like a 70s movie,
you know,
100%.
It's really grungy and fun that way. And I was really kind of on board with it. And then I started feeling like it was some of the worst editing I'd ever seen. So it's weird. Yeah. It's like, there were some impressive ideas. Let's put it this way. I think the ideas were smart in the editing, but the execution felt really lumpy to me and poorly. The ideas were smart, but the actual rhythms of the editing really bothered me in this movie. And they got worse. So
the movie deals with the phenomenon of cattle mutilations, and the movie, spoiler alert, makes a definite, definitive decision on what these things are, but it hides it well also throughout the movie. It gives you glimpses indicating that, oh, maybe there are UFOs taking these things, and then the movie reveals that it's not UFOs, or at least aliens. Well, it kind of is UFOs. It's unidentified flying craft, but it's very human in origin, and we'll get into that a little later in case you haven't seen it. But, you know, I thought that was well done, too, before I go off what I really thought of the movie. I'm trying to be positive. It did a good job of kind of hiding its own conceit. I thought, you know, I must admit, I agree, the first half hour, I was very invested. I said, this is really cool. Really weirdly edited, but I'm weird in a good, the good weird, like the good 70s. And I'm in, and I'm like, how are they going to resolve this? Because they're showing us very lunky UFO craft, as it were. And I'm like, wow, this is really cool. How are they going to pull this off?
I think that you're looking at a movie that I think something bad happened. I think something like went wrong in the middle of this movie. Like, either they lost half their budget in the middle of the movie, or it was a way harder movie to make than they thought it was going to be, or something, you know, like maybe Alan Rudolph, whose stuff I like and Emilio has worked with.
Wow.
Mrs. Parker in The Vicious Circle, that is a movie of his.
Holy moly.
She had a good experience with him. He's a really cool, he's an interesting filmmaker. He's a cool person. Coming from the Robert Altman school, you know, he worked with Altman for years, and you can kind of see that influence in the first part of this movie. And then I think something happened. Either they had to rewrite the script for some reason, or I don't know, all the things that were great about it, they just started discarding for a pretty tropey, silly, like extra, you know, horror movie thing.
So in late grade school, I think, early junior high, late grade school, I've mentioned on this podcast before, my dad bought, as he called it, a camcorder, the big video. I think I was in fifth or sixth grade, and I started making movies with my friends with the old VHS tapes. Some of them were parodies, and some of them, the early ones, I did with such earnestness, and I meant business, and I tried to do these kind of like tough detective movies, and all I could think of was Robert Urich be tough in this movie was like, oh my God, that's pretty much the dialogue and the scenes that we did, my friends and I.
Yeah, there are even in the good parts of the movie, it's still like a guilty pleasure. There's some really cheesy fun stuff in it.
Awesome.
You know, like in the first part, you're going like, ooh, that feels like Jaws. And they really capitalize on this small town crisis thing.
Yes.
You know, and they make her Brody and she's trying to deal with it. You know, mm-hmm. they do a good job of kind of riffing on Jaws. And then they also kind of riff on Close Encounters a little bit in certain respects with the, you know, the scenes around the table with the town board are very much shot and feel like the scene in Close Encounters where they have that news gathering where they get into that big fight about Bigfoot at the end. I mean, the references are really, they're really using the best kind of stuff to try to make this real. And then somehow like the fake romance, like the creepy stalker, violent romance that's going on takes over the movie, and his relationship with his daughter, which really shouldn't, I don't know why, is in here. It's kind of takes over the movie, and all these other things happen that you're like, why are we talking about this? Let's go back to the,
we had it, we blew it. I also think you're onto something with the money. It does feel like a movie that ran out of steam. It feels like a movie that ran out of funding. I made a list of some things that made me think this was shot, and you'll be able to, you know, a lot about all these movies. I'll read you my notes. I feel like this was shot somewhere near Spawn Ranch, and they started to have to use leftovers from weird old movies for both set and gear. For example, the fire truck guys on the outside of it, like the dusty cars that almost look like they're from Tim Burton sets, like leftovers from old movies. The getaway van of the bad guys in the firehouse scene looked like something that was abandoned. The soundtrack, like everything just looks super weird. And I almost thought maybe they shot it in Bulgaria or something at some point. They had to leave Spawn Ranch and go shoot in Bulgaria because everything
looks like it looks to me like they were out in Wyoming or Colorado or something. I mean, wherever they got a cheap permit to shoot.
I believe literally they were there. I'm just saying it looked weird.
That's the budget part. I think they really had to save their money for a couple of, you know, things that they really didn't need to.
You ever seen a fire truck that looked like that?
No, I haven't. I mean,
what is happening right now?
It's possible that town was like actually a ghost town, and then they had to repopulate it and then bring in things like that.
That's why I said Spawn Ranch. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, I agree with you. It does. But I mean, that's also like as much that stuff starts to bother you later, whereas in the first part, it's part of the kind of fun of it. And the pleasure of it is seeing them kind of like make this happen with a low budget. They have a good cast. You know,
they have a great cast.
I'm really thrilled with a lot of that.
Although, one caveat, and I love him as a persona, as a personality, but why did Hoyt Axton get so many like juicy acting roles? Like, I don't, are you with me? Like, great persona. Great look.
He's got this in Gremlins. I mean, how many, you know, Endangered Species is not exactly like, you know, on heavy rotation.
I know, but it's like, why did, there's so many actors that could have played that part that would have been, His death. Okay. This is really disturbing scene. He gets poisoned. Hoyt accident. It's like really good the way they you know, the guy from Cheers.
Poison takes forever.
Takes forever. And he's like, Carla's wife poisons him. And Carla's husband. And his mouth is bleeding. I'm like, really cool. Okay, great. And then all of a sudden, like, smash cut to Robert Urich's like, I'm going to make the dying poison guy drive me at gunpoint.
Yeah.
They have
bad idea. It's just
unintelligible dialogue, and then it just ends with the Hoyt actually going like, God, I'm an American.
Look, you know, I don't even mind giving stuff away here. This is an old movie. I'm telling you, the first half hour, 40 minutes is okay, and then it hits a wall. It hits a wall around when the fake Satanists burn that barn down, and then they have a techno. It's like they invented techno music to put in here in the wrong place.
You're either very dumb or very brave.
Is that bull all right?
About medium rare.
There's like techno music where a cow is trying to escape from a barn, and you're like,
the cow they set on fire, by the way.
Yeah, and they set this cow on fire. It looks like it is. And full disclosure, look, if you want to see this movie, you are going to see a lot of cow carcasses, but
because
it's a cattle mutilation movie, let's face it. I don't think animals were harmed to make the movie. I think they were animals that had already died, and they, you know.
It's a great caveat, Tony. That might trigger you. Something else that might trigger you is Robert Urich basically assaulting Jo Beth Williams in the shower.
And then her
the next day going, what? Did you leave because of last night? I kind of liked it. Why would you leave?
I was really kind of turned off by that whole thing. I found, look, there's a certain like weird, bizarre bravery to have your main, you know, hero dude character to be that unlikable. I mean, they do everything they can to make you want this guy to die in the movie.
Yep.
He's horrible. I mean,
I think here's the insidious part too. I agree with you. That's the effect. I think they were kind of, for most of it, trying to make him like a heroic tough guy who just didn't give a like, there's so many lines of him proving how tough he was.
I think that was not the intention, but I think that's what happened. I think casting Urich was a rough idea. I don't think he has a lot of subtlety. I think that, remember, part of what made the 70s interesting and cool was that they were into showing warts and all stuff. They were into depicting characters who you weren't supposed to aspire to.
Right.
We weren't supposed to like this guy. He was a drunk, deadbeat dad who treated his daughter pretty poorly, and he's got a lot of problems and blah blah blah. I think they didn't expect us to have this kind of reaction where it's got an uncomfortable mix with, like, you know, like, you think it's Jo Beth Williams, first of all, like, don't treat her like that.
Don't you dare do that. And I didn't understand. I physically didn't understand something. You need to explain it. I'm not being
the shower serious. Scene. Is
I didn't understand
happened.
It.
No, what so, happens there?
Was
I don't know. It's the weirdest moment.
Here's what I think happened. So what I think happened is he faked an injury sitting naked on the toilet to lure her into the shower. And then in the process of foisting himself upon her, she actually kicks him in the nuts or something they don't show. And then he actually screams out in real pain in the exact way he was faking the pain. But I was extremely confused.
Yeah, it looked like he just went into another take. Like, let's just reset. And they just kept the whole thing running.
That's literally what it looks like. So, and then the next scene, he says something like, well, I forget the exact dialogue. I've tried to wash it from my mind, but he said something like, you know, after I make love, usually I stick around or something. And she goes, well, usually someone asks me before they do. I'm like, you never even had sex. Or did you? I don't know.
It's rough. Really, truly. I'm glad I thought of you when we were watching that shower scene. Because I, I, that's, It was the most insane thing that I saw anybody keep in a movie. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
It makes no one look good, or it's just weird and uncomfortable.
I almost think that he just kept it in just to be weird and strange. Like it was as if it was a Robert Altman move of some kind to, you know, keep this weird, like,
yeah,
disjointed editing thing of like, we'll put two takes in one and we won't know why he's screaming in agony.
Yeah, it's like, again, high school noir is the best. Like, when they're sitting later at the table drinking Jack out of the coffee mug, like, together, yeah, like, talking like two cops. Just like, what is happening?
It's the movie just rolls right off a cliff, because I feel like it's ending up, it's like going someplace, you know. Or maybe what happened was that Alan Rudolph, who's, you know, he makes really interesting arty weird movies, but they're not like thrillers like this. This is kind of an outlier for him. It's not
kind of a mashup
for. Yeah, and it's almost like he had so much fun just with these characters in this small town, and that's the part of it that works, with the, like,
yeah,
the slight mystery of it. And then the minute you figure out what's going on and the government or these paramilitary guys get involved,
yeah,
it's like the movie, he's like, he woke up and was like, oh my God, that's right, I'm making a B movie with all,
yes,
this stuff in
it's
it.
Really, and well, and said.
And that part just doesn't work. I really just didn't understand it from a writing perspective. Like, the way it ends is so abrupt and strange and unsatisfying, I thought. I don't want to give the exact ending away, but I mean, only because it's boring. Like, I honestly, like, that. I really felt cheated too, like, by the,
well,
lack of mystery about all of it. You know, it's like, it's a really interesting mystery that they boiled down. I mean, that they boiled this down to its least interesting components.
But that was a huge trend then, and for years after, and this I can speak to because it is a paranormal podcast. I remember that whole thing. So what the movie decides is that cattle mutilations are a result of a banning of testing on animals, so that anyone who wanted to do any sort of food testing or anything like that started mutilating cattle and doing their testing. And that's clearly where, and the book was written as such. I forget the name of the book, but a book was written by a guy who said, like, kind of cattle mutilation solved. And here's what it is. It's because they banned testing. The government banned testing on animals, which has since been, there's so many things about the cattle mutilation phenomenon that supersedes that explanation.
Yeah, yeah.
That it's long since been kind of almost debunked, if you will. No one knows what it is still, but certainly that doesn't explain all cattle mutilations. So,
no.
Which is fine. Yeah, and maybe it makes that decision fine, but you're right. It's like just handled off.
You know, honestly though, Maddie, like, this is where it's not fine to me, because you can't, they just decide that that's what it is, but then they don't do any work or writing to describe or explain the things that are already happening that are mysterious.
Do you know what that company was exactly doing?
You'd never find that out.
Never, other than living in a Austin Powers-esque Dr. Evil lair.
Yeah.
Mixed with an episode of the A-Team.
Right. Well, there's like 12 guys down there doing this whole operation. Now, okay, there's clearly a hovering craft with tentacles that come out of it that we see part of, but that isn't explained. Is that the helicopter? They seem to imply that we've developed a whisper, literally silent helicopter.
Silent helicopter.
Don't think they've done.
Right.
And so there's big parts of the mystery that they even knew back in 82 that they just gloss over. The biggest one, Maddie, and this is what actually made me angry, is that, okay, about the 40 minutes in, I'm starting to go, why are they leaving these cadavers out there then, if this is a secret operation? And then about 10 minutes later, Jo Beth Williams asks that question.
Yep.
And they're like, well, I don't know, and it could be this or it could be that. And it never comes up again.
I think she even says, maybe it's part of their testing.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Whatever. Well, okay. If you're writing this movie, you really need to answer that question for me to give it a pass at all. And I was really, I mean, unless you're just going to go with the mystery part that we don't know. So, yeah, but then don't decide half of it for us and then leave the rest of it like, oh, it's a mystery. I don't know. Like, no, you said you solved it. So fucking solve it and then we'll make a movie. How about that?
I think the person really to blame here is Robert Urich's dialogue coach for his New York accent.
Wow. It was incredible. It was like they wanted to, it was like almost like they were trying to grab some Beverly Hills Cop thing with him as a transplant. Did you get that? Like with his, the way he kind of started around and his baseball jacket.
I'm a fish out of water.
Yeah.
I got a Mets t-shirt on. I beat up monsters and I'm in a small town.
Yeah. Eddie Murphy already did this a lot better, man. Why don't you relax? As a matter of fact, Eddie Murphy in this movie would have, that would have been the best.
How about this? You mentioned it earlier, the barn getting set on fire by two drifters. It's then explained, I guess, that they, because they, you see them working for the evil corporation under Peter Coyote's tutelage. Those two guys are like henchmen. Robert Urich then goes like, might have to talk to these guys. I'm going to talk to these guys. And I'm like, all right, maybe we'll get a little dialogue. That scene is literally nothing. Like,
you want a cigarette? He's like, I can't get anything out of these guys.
It's one of the funniest things
I've ever seen. Oh, like, God. Yeah.
I think they were trying to show that he was tough and not, couldn't be intimidated. I don't know, but it was just hilarous.
Be intimidated by people behind bars? Like, what?
Usually you use that scene to show his detective skills. All he does is ask a guy with a cigarette, and the guy goes, "Fuck you," and he goes, "All right, see you later."
These guys are tough. I can't get anywhere with these guys.
Oh, my God.
Harry
Carey Jr. is in this movie, which is interesting.
He is.
Uh-huh.
Isn't he the vet?
Yeah, like I believe so. Vet. Yeah, I believe
that's
so.
That's a great scene, the opening scene with the cattle, like them trying to figure out what's going on. Anything with Paul Dooley in it is pretty good until Paul Dooley ends a dinner party saying like, you know, the interesting thing about cows is that their reproduction organs are the same as people. You're like,
hold on. He completely contradicts himself, or at least kind of talks himself in a circle, because he's trying to convince, you talk about bad writing, you know, the motivation of characters. He's trying to like convince Robert Urich to get interested in this case for some reason. Robert Urich is acting like he doesn't care for some reason. And then he actually like contradicts himself. Paul Dooley's character says, I wrote it down. He goes, basically his argument is like, it could be UFOs. You don't know. This could be UFOs. And then like literally 5 seconds later, he points to Robert Urich and goes, but everything has a logical explanation. Don't you forget that. I'm like, well, which is it?
Exactly.
They're just spouting platitudes.
It's just, you know, it falls off a cliff. And I think I forgot enough about the movie to forget that that's my first, that was how I felt about it in 82. And I forgot it and it went back and I was like, you know what? This hasn't changed at all. This has not grown up with me. It's remained not a very good movie.
You and your brother did a game on your other podcast, the Arkham Brothers Talk Movies. What would you pair this movie with I think you did a food one, but then you did like, what would you double feature this movie? I've got a wrinkle on that and what this movie reminded me of. And I think a good comp, it reminded me a bit of Halloween 3. In terms of the feel of it, the look of it, kind of where it goes and how it kind of devolves, the lead, you know, it had a Halloween 3 vibe to me. Was that the one with whatever the Halloween was with the masks? The jack-o'-lantern mask. Is that 3 or 4?
That's Halloween 3, I believe.
The evil company making the masks and the song and the commercial. Gotcha. It had that feel to
Halloween.
Yes.
Halloween.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I feel like that'd be a good double feature.
I would probably put this with what was Sly? I don't want to bring up Stallone because you haven't yet. What was Stallone's what was the arm wrestling movie?
Oh yeah, Over the Top.
I think I would do this with Over the Top. I think they happen in the same universe.
By the way, great accidental segue to we lost the great Terry Funk, who was one of the, he was a professional wrestler who had a pretty good acting career. Yeah,
I saw that. We did lose Terry Funk. That's right.
And he's the tough guy in Over the Top.
Sure he is.
Can we go Over the Top next week for our movie?
It's not going to get a paranormal rating, but we can do it.
By the way, can I talk about Over the Top for just like 25 minutes?
No, you cannot do that.
Robert Loggia. Loggia? How do you say his name?
I think it's Loggia, but Loggia? I don't hold me to it.
The grandfather in Over the Top is like the villain of that movie. But really, all he's trying to do is protect his dead daughter's son from his arm wrestling trucker father.
You remind me, never bring up Stallone again.
Who wants to take the kid on the road with him? Because you know what happens at bars where there's arm wrestling competition between truckers. Everything's on the up and up. There's no drugs or alcohol for a 10-year-old in those environments. So they play him as the evil
clinical error
rich guy who's trying to stop this innocent.
Fatal.
I'm like, Robert Loggia is right. Why should Stallone take this child out of his mansion to go arm wrestling across the country at truck stops?
Try to do one nice thing, and this is how it backfires. You know, you try to. I'm never talking about any of these movies again. You can't know that movie that well.
Oh my God. Can't. It's one of the greatest films of all time.
Let's get back on point. Right. Why do they leave the cow carcasses?
You'll never know. You'll never know.
It's a mystery. Just like we thought the cattle mutilations themselves were.
Just look at Joe Beth Williams' hair. Just look at it.
Just look at it. Look at how shiny it is.
That was a sweet perm. She should have gone on a list of great perms.
I've got nothing.
We actually did a top three of perms. Well, I think I've hit everything.
There were some very talented people that worked on this movie. It should have been better.
Let me name check Dan Hedaya. I was calling him Carla's husband from Cheers, but he was much more than that. A great character actor, or at least a working character actor.
A unique character actor.
He actually has one of my favorite lines in sitcom history. His second wife was a ditzy blonde character after Carla. And there's something going on. And the wife said, well, that's not right, the ditzy blonde. And she says, I'm going to write my congressman a letter. And he goes, okay, I'll get the crayons.
I see there the comedy stylings.
I'll get the crayons.
He's great in Joe versus the Volcano.
Never saw it.
Oh, that's some fun stuff.
Never saw it.
But I really only have one thing to say now.
Okay.
All right. What in holy f*** was happening with Peter Coyote's mustache?
Oh! What was happening with his character?
What did happen?
Who was he? What did he have to do with Hoyt Axton?
I have a theory.
Okay.
I think somewhere in here, in that moment, in this scene, is where the movie, something happened. Something bad happened. And I think I know what it was. Did you notice that it went from one scene where it was like, you know, late August, September, and then they cut to Hoyt Axton driving through the snow.
In the winter, in the same day. So I go, okay, maybe he drove up in the mountains, but that's never explained. It's a hot summer day.
Yeah.
And then he follows a guy and he follows him into the snow.
So something happened either. They didn't get the scene that they shot the first time.
Yep.
And they called in Peter Coyote as an emergency replacement because something didn't happen.
Slapped
and
he's like, mustache
I have to have a character mustache or I won't do it. And this was the only mustache in Colorado at the time.
But at least like show him going up a hill at least. So you go, okay, he's up in the mountains and it's snowy up there. This clearly looked like an out of sequence shot done months later.
Something happened. Like something terrible happened. They had a snowstorm that threw off the schedule, or they had to rewrite something, or the actor playing Coyote originally like quit.
But I can't believe that. I was so apoplectic at that moment. I didn't even put it in my notes. I'm like, how are we in the winter right now? Like when did in the same day?
But nothing excuses to just trim the goddamn mustache. He's a government op. He's not going to have like a dirty drug dealer mustache. He has got like a mustache from He's like somebody in Barney Miller who's locked up in the back. Like, it doesn't, that's not how it works.
No. Oh. And then they're all dressed up as military guys, but they're not military.
They're not military. What are they? It's 16 guys who are like, why are you, they don't even explain any of it.
That scene with Peter Coyote, outside the helicopter is quintessential my high school or junior high movie.
You did. You directed and starred in that.
Literally. Like, he pulls out his gun and then the other guy has a gun. Guy doesn't know how to hold a gun.
Absolute nonsense.
Holding it ridiculously unbelievable.
Nonsense. Yeah.
It's just nonsense. And the unintentionally funny line is Hoyt Axton says, don't you forget about what this really is about. But that's never explained.
Never.
We don't know how do they know
it's about.
How do they know each other? Was he in his family or something? I'm still confused.
They just cut that out of the movie. And then instead they put in a long date with the daughter and that local pervy cop, like sheriff deputy.
Oh, they're making out in the cars. One of the most horrible things I've ever seen. She reminded me of Christy McNichol. Do you remember Christy McNichol, right?
Yes, exactly.
I think that's what the look she was going for.
That was strange.
It was all strange. A waste of time. Like, why did they bag the two guys? And bagging those two guys did nothing. It meant nothing. It led to nothing, right?
So many plot lines. I mean, just cull some of this back, because at the end, like, you're going to spend the last 40 minutes running around a warehouse shooting like that. Like, it's so stupid that this movie about one of the most weirdest, like, mysteries, American mysteries, ends in like a 20-minute Magnum, like bad episode of Magnum shootout in a warehouse. Yes.
Yeah, it's an A-team episode. I said,
with nothing special about it.
It's, no,
they promised us UFOs. We don't see them. We don't know what they are. We don't know how they get the cows around. We don't know anything. We don't know why they're doing it. But it's like they Scooby Dooed you. They're like, oh, it's like Scooby Doo. It's like, it's old Mr. Professor Withers. It's a projector, but they don't tell you why Mr. Withers is doing it. At least in Scooby-Doo, they're like, well, because they were going to move the gravestones, or that this, you know, my grandfather built this house and you can't. There was some kind
There's
of reason.
Some explanation for it. You're right. One thing I'll say that was good in that final act is the Peter Coyote death. The way he falls and then splats onto the ground. That was actually pretty well done.
That was pretty good.
That was a good stunt.
Yeah.
And a pretty satisfying thud. Although the blood.
It's like a blood pack that they put into the dummy.
Well, like when they drag him off, it's like a perfect circle of just like bright red paint.
Yeah.
Not even close to the color of human blood.
You're in Colorado. I think they got that location of like an old missile silo out there in Wyoming or something.
And wrote the entire movie around.
Yeah.
Yes. And a helicopter rental. They had a helicopter rental. Right. And someone could do some work on the helicopter, make it look cool. Yeah. Remember that movie Blue Thunder with Bob
Thunder,
Roy Scheider?
I do very well. Great stuff.
Is that what
stuff.
It was, Blue Thunder? Yeah.
Roy Scheider. John Madden movie. It's great.
Flips the helicopter over.
Great helicopter.
Maybe that would be a good double billing with this one. All right, so Tony, is Endangered Species going to make it on the shelf?
You know, it pains me to say no. Like, it actually does, because there was enough going for it that I thought this would be kind of like an undiscovered gem that was like, should everybody see. Now, if you're into weird offshoot movies, I think it is worth seeing. It's not like this is such garbage that I think you should avoid it.
It's
a curiosity. It's got some interesting stuff in it.
And it's funny at times unintentionally, which is worth it.
If you're interested in like the weird connection to like Alan Rudolph and Robert Altman, which is there, and you can kind of... He was a student of Robert Altman's, basically. Like, he was Robert Altman's assistant director for years. He wrote one of his movies. They had a long relationship, and you could see that he learned a lot from Altman, and kind of the way that he has all these characters and the over-talking and kind of sloppy, realistic feeling to it.
Sure.
I liked all that.
Yeah.
I wish it had just stayed that way and let it be a little mystery about a town rather than trying to answer this. Because now it's clear that it's a... None of it's true anyway. Their whole take on it is crap, you know. So
Well, so no. I agree. It's not going to quite make it on.
Sorry, Joe Beth.
It is one of my great laughing moments though, watching this film. So I thank you for it. I'll never
forget. You're welcome. Was it the shower scene that really got you?
Shower scene, the pouring, them downing Jack together at the kitchen table, doing that dialogue, that noir dialogue. There was a million moments. the prison scene, the jail scene, when he goes to interrogate them and says nothing to them.
It's amazing. It couldn't have been like Matt of MacGruber. Like, it could not have been funny.
Yes, yes. Oh, well, Robert Urich is very handsome, by the way. I forgot how handsome he was.
Very handsome. God. He must have read for Magnum. He tested for
yes,
Magnum.
Yes, yes, yes.
He could
yes.
have been that. You could have seen it. Could have been gone either way.
Yeah, yeah, I could see that. Tom Selleck has this kind of charm, his natural charm.
Yeah, Urich always looks a little annoyed.
Yes, yes. Tom Selleck has a self-deprecation about him. As handsome as he is, he's got this kind of bumbly, I screwed up. Robert Urich.
But he looks smarter than Robert Urich. Robert Urich doesn't project in a lot of intelligence. Yeah,
right. I think Robert Urich would be like, now I'm going to self-deprecate in this scene. Watch this.
I'm wearing pants. I got a shirt on. Yeah, that's like the level of authority. Didn't do a lot of work at being a cop either. Like like, this is like a TV show. I'll just be.
Yeah, give me a Mets t-shirt. I want a Mets t-shirt. all right. Next week, we have to pick a movie. Didn't you mention you want to do the one that Michael S. King recommended?
So this is a TV show.
Let's not do that then, because I wouldn't have time to watch more than.
Yeah. The Evil Dead or Evil Dead Rise from 2023. Directed by Lee Cronin, starring Mirabai Peace, Richard Crouchley, and Anna Marie Thomas.
I'm all in. Let's go. Evil Dead. Everybody watch it. We'll be back here. By the way, we want to hear your thoughts on the congressional hearing. We got kind of a little serious tonight, which we do from time to time. Love to hear your thoughts on what you thought about the UFO UAP congressional hearings. You can hit us up on social media. You know where to go. We are at Rated Paranormal on Instagram and Facebook and everywhere else. All right, Tony, until next week, I'll see you soon, buddy.
You bet, man.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of Rated P for Paranormal. Please rate, review, and share. It really does make a difference. On social media, we're at Rated Paranormal. All music is by Andrew Galdens Jr. You can find him on Instagram at Kid Riga or go to therocketscience.bandcamp.com. This podcast was created, written, produced, and edited by Maddie Blake and Anthony Arkin.
Can I talk about over the top for just like 25 minutes?
No.